राधा माधव कुंज बिहार गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवार धारी यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहार गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवार धारी जय राधा माधव जन वल्लभ गिरिवार धारी हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे 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 राम हरे राम राम हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद 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 जय जय प्रभुपद प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथ राज श्रीमद् भागवतम की और प्रेमानंदी ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
हरे कृष्णा
हरे
कृष्णा So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1 Chapter 17 Verse number 38 Suta uvacha.
Suta
uvacha. Abhyarkitas tada tasmai. Abhyarkitas tada tasmai. Sthanani kalaye dadao. Sthanani kalaye dadao. Dutam panam sriyasuna.
Dutam
panam sriyasuna. Yatradhamas chaturvidha. Yatradhamas chaturvidha. Suta uvacha. Abhyarthitas tada tasmai. Kalaye dadao. Dutam panam sriyasuna. Yatradhamas chaturvidha. Please repeat. Sutta Uvacha.
Sutta
Goswami said.
Abhyartita.
Thus being petitioned.
Tada.
At that time.
Tasmai.
Unto him.
Sthanani.
Places.
Kalaye.
To the personality of Kali.
Dadao
gave him permission.
Dyutam
gambling.
Panam
drinking.
Striya
illicit association with women.
Suna
animal slaughter.
Yatra
wherever.
Adharma
sinful activity.
Chaturvidha.
Four kinds of.
Four kinds of.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila
Prabhupada.
Sutta Goswami said, Maharaj Parikshit, thus being petitioned by the personality of Kali, gave him permission to reside in places where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter were performed. Purport. The basic principles of irreligiosity, such as pride, prostitution, intoxication, and falsehood, counteract the four principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. The personality of Kali was given permission to live in four places, particularly mentioned by the king, namely the place of gambling, the place of prostitution, the place of drinking, and the place of animal slaughter. Srila Jiva Goswami directs that drinking against the principles of scriptures, such as the Sautramani Yajna, association with women outside of marriage, and killing animals against the injunction of scriptures are irreligious. In the Vedas, two different types of injunctions are there for the pravritas, or those who are engaged in material enjoyment, and for the nivritas, or those who are liberated from material enjoyment. The Vedic injunction for the pravritas is to gradually regulate their activities towards the path of liberation. Therefore, for those who are in the lowest stage of ignorance and who indulge in wine, women, and flesh, drinking by performing Sautramani Yajna, association of women by marriage, and flesh eating by sacrifice are sometimes recommended. Such recommendations in the Vedic literature are meant for a particular class of men and not for all. But because they are injunctions of the Vedas for particular types of persons, such activities by the pravritas are not considered dharma. One man's food may be poison for others. Similarly, what is recommended for those in the mode of ignorance may be poison for those in the mode of goodness. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu therefore affirms that recommendations in the scriptures for a certain class of men are never to be considered dharma or irreligious. But such activities are factually adharma, and they are never to be encouraged. The recommendations in the scriptures are not meant for the encouragement of such adharma, but for regulating the necessary adharma gradually towards the path of dharma. Following the footsteps of Maharaj Parikshit, it is the duty of all executive heads of states to see that the principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, are established in the state, and that the principles of irreligion, namely pride, illicit female association of prostitution, intoxication, and falsity, are checked by all means. And to make the best use of a bad bargain, the personality of Kali may be transferred to places of gambling, drinking, prostitution, and slaughterhouses. If there are any places like that, those who are addicted to these irreligious habits may be regulated by the injunctions of the scriptures. In no circumstances should they be encouraged by any state. In other words, the state should categorically stop all sorts of gambling, drinking, prostitution, and falsity. The state which wants to eradicate corruption by majority may introduce the principles of religion in the following manner. 1. Two compulsory fasting days a month, if not more, austerity. Even from the economic point of view, such two fasting days in a month in the state will save tons of food, and the system will also act very favorably on the general health of the citizens. And we do such a great example of this on Ekadashi, where we eat so minimally, right? Number two, there must be compulsory marriage of young boys and girls attaining 24 years of age and 16 years of age respectively. Remember, we have to remember these statements are coming from time, place, circumstance. There is no harm in coeducation in the schools and colleges, provided the boys and girls are duly married. And in case there is any intimate connection between male and female student, they should be married properly without illicit relations. The Divorce Act is encouraging prostitution, and this should be abolished. The citizens of the state must give in charity up to 50% of their income for the purpose of creating a spiritual atmosphere in the state or in human society, both individually and collectively. They should preach the principles of Bhagavatam by A, karma yoga, or doing everything for the satisfaction of the Lord, B, regular hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam from authorized persons or realized souls. C, chanting of the glories of the Lord congregationally at home or at places of worship. D, rendering all kinds of service to Bhagavatas, engaging preaching Srimad Bhagavatam. And E, residing in a place where the atmosphere is saturated with God consciousness. If the state is regulated by the above process, naturally there will be God consciousness everywhere. Gambling of all description, even speculative business practice, is considered to be degrading. And when gambling is encouraged in the state, there is a complete disappearance of truthfulness. Allowing young boys and girls to remain unmarried more than the above mentioned ages, and licensing animal slaughter of all descriptions should be at once prohibited. The flesh eaters may be allowed to take flesh, as mentioned in the scriptures, and not otherwise. Intoxication of all description, even smoking cigarettes, chewing tobacco, or the drinking of tea, must be prohibited. Okay, pretty solid right there. Maybe somebody can introduce that to the township of Alachua. I'm going to read this off to them, see what they think. Om Magana Timidandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Thapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristhaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Prachadine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatadine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaurabhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Hare Krishna, everyone. So, just reading the purport, at least the first portion of it, I was thinking that the Vedic tradition and is so, in one sense, liberal and so generous. And because it's able to recognize that people are in different phases of life, and what is surrender for one is not necessarily surrender for another. What is austerity for one is not necessarily austerity for another. And I'm so grateful that I was introduced to Prabhupada and these teachings, because it gives you an opportunity to grow at your own pace. And one thing, I know when I was doing a lot of college preaching, Western students would come. The one thing that they were really tired of in the Judeo-Christian background was that if you don't surrender to Jesus, you go to hell. It was like one size fits all. There was no extra small, there was no small, no medium, large, extra large. It was like one size fits all. It's either this or hell. And nobody likes just two options. And why do we like to go to, why are we going to come to the Thanksgiving buffet? If they were just serving kichdi and halva, I guarantee they wouldn't need a sign-up sheet the day before. Right? If it was just that, kichdi and halva, okay, we need you to sign up. We're just showing up or we're just cook some tofurkey at home, right? So we like variety. Life is full of variety. You look at the number of colors there are in this universe, the number of flowers. Not, just so many varieties of everything. How can there just be either you're going to God, you know, Jesus Loka, or hell? Like, how can it just be two options? And so, as I began to understand what Prabhupada was teaching gradually, I just began to appreciate that there's space and room for me to grow at my own pace. And Prabhupada has given everybody, the Vedic tradition has given everyone space and room to grow. And it's so nice what's being written here, that it says that there's two types of injunctions, two types of individuals, pravratas, those who are engaged in material enjoyment, and then the nivratas, who are already liberated. And Prabhupada spends a lot of time talking about the pravratas, that there are injunctions for those who are going to be breaking the principles, in some way, that there's ways that they can do that in somewhat of a way that's authorized for them. Because if you ask somebody down here to all of a sudden adopt practices that are this high, what do you think is going to happen? There's going to be lots of falling down sounds, right? And I think that's exactly what's happened in the history of our movement, is we had every one of us, not just those in the 60s and 70s, like my upbringing was not any different than anyone else's. And so we didn't grow up following these principles, and all of a sudden, boom, we're introduced to Brahminical culture. Like, oh my gosh, this is what I'm supposed to do. The first is, you're overwhelmed like anything. Like, I remember when I found out about the four principles, I was like, I don't know how that's gonna happen. And when I found out about 16 rounds, I was like, nah, that's probably not going to happen. I mean, I was just like realistic and practical. That's probably not going to happen. Maybe one or two rounds, okay. And I felt pretty good after chanting a whole round. Felt pretty satisfied with myself. So, but luckily, there's room for us to kind of take it at our own pace. And we come in, and we immediately are introduced to like the highest Brahminical culture and the practices of Brahminical culture. That's extremely overwhelming. And I think that's something that we can try to be more sensitive of as a new person walks into our institution, to know that if when they see and learn about the highest Brahminical principles, they're probably down here, most likely. And that's just an overwhelming leap to take, and probably not a healthy leap to take either. Like even for myself, to become a vegetarian, it took me over a year. I just started giving up one kind of animal gradually from my diet, and then gradually it took me a whole year to actually just stop eating meat. It took me a whole year. It took me a good couple years to start chanting 16 rounds. So it took a while, and it may take everybody a different amount of time. And that's okay. And what this is, and that I really, really was appreciating that it's that it says, but activity, saying here that because there are injunctions of the Vedas for particular types of persons, such activities by the Prabhupadas are not considered a dharma. They're not irreligious for them. So when we see someone who's doing, you know, certain things, you know, we weren't there, we were there not too long ago. We were there in that frame of mind, so now we are here and now we judge them. It's just, I don't know, a little hypocritical because we were there not too long ago. Know that, and we should understand that people are going to grow at their own pace. I'm not going to make someone a pure devotee. I'm just going to maybe give some prasadam, be nice to them, maybe bring them here, and then see, let Krishna take it from there. As instruments, we plant little seeds and we give a little support, but that's it. We can't expect people to be jumping from tamogun to sattvagun. Like, you know, we've been, I can say for myself, after, you know, a certain number of years, I just still don't think I'm in sattvagun. Most of the time, I'm just not there. Once in a while, I kind of fall into sattvagun, and then most of the time, I'm just out of it. So, I think that's something just for us to appreciate. How Vedic culture recognizes diversity, and how it recognizes the different stages a human being has to go through gradually before they get to that level, and that'll probably take a few lifetimes. And so that, because that is there, it's so powerful, and I really do appreciate that Prabhupada also was so kind of generous and compassionate. I mean, from my understanding, the first group of devotees he initiated at 26 Second Avenue didn't know what the regular principles were. So it's like, okay, that's what you call some serious compassion. Right? That's serious compassion. And he can do that because he's the acharya, right? He understands whatever, you know, that this was okay to do to get the movement started. He needed to get the movement like started. And so it's like, okay, yeah, whoever wants to sit in, you get initiated. And you know, people are getting initiated after a few weeks, a month, or whatever. It's just like, you know, whoever can make it to the fire, you got initiated. And so he was compassionate, he was generous, he knew that most of these, you know, if who knows, if they hadn't asked him about, he's like, are we supposed to do something? Yeah, these are the four things you can do. What? And so I'm just wondering what would have happened if they didn't actually ask. How long the whole thing would have just gone on. So, but anyways, Prabhupada was like, okay, we'll do this and one step at a time. So they asked, so he told them. And now what we do is we tell without even being asked. Right? He waited for them to be asked, and so he told them. We're eager to tell even when we're not asked. So there's always been generosity, I think, on Prabhupada's part and the way he dealt with the devotees who were coming to him. He was always compassionate, thoughtful, understanding, not pushy. I mean, those who needed to be pushed, he pushed them. And that's fine. A teacher has that right to do that for their students. But he was pretty generous with I think, a lot of his disciples. And giving people sannyas, whew, that's another big one. That's you, just like, you know, giving 20-year-olds sannyas. Hey, there you go, here's a danda. And here's that front cloth. So, and especially who are coming from, like, straight up tamagun. And just like a year into devotional service, boom, or 2 years into devotional service. So, it was a chance that he took, and he knew what was going to happen. He wasn't clueless. He knew exactly what he was doing. Again, the movement needed to be kick-started, and so he gave it the start that it needed. And so I think that when we understand the generous nature of Vedic culture, the generous nature of our scripture, hopefully it allows us to also be generous with people that we come in contact with. And I think that's the way to really show gratitude to Prabhupada. Have that mood of his, the mood of generosity and compassion. And I think that's how we can really show gratitude to Prabhupada and be compassionate to others. And you know, for me, there was one time where, since it's the mood of thanksgiving and gratitude, I remember there was one incident where I felt really grateful for what Prabhupada had given. I think it was like 2000. I was brand new to devotional service. I just went to Vrindavan, gone there with a few devotees first, and then I went there by myself to stay there for a month. Still don't know everything. And I'm staying there for a month in one of these, I think, Ogla ashram. I can't remember. It was one of these ashrams that I was staying at. And I had a great time. It was wonderful. I had my own program. I'd go to the morning program. I'd grab some hot milk afterwards and some Mahaprasad, and then go up and study Bhagavad Gita for a few hours on the rooftop underneath the sun. And then during the afternoons, I started to get more familiar with Vrindavan. I would go to the different Goswami temples and take prasadam in different places. And I just got to know Vrindavan a little bit. And it was just blissful. Then, a year or two later, I went back, or I was about to go back, and I was thinking, oh, I can't wait to go back. And I'm going to visit the Radha Damodar temple and Gopal Bhatta Goswami Samadhi, because I had been to these places, I'd taken prasadam, I had great memories of these. I'm going to go to this temple, and I'm going to go to this temple, and I'm going to go to this temple, I'm going to do this and this and this. And I realized that at one point, so my mind was just like, I wanted to go everywhere. It was going to be like a vacation for me. It was almost a mood of enjoying all of these places, not in the worst way, but still, my mind was like, okay, I'm going to go do all of these same things that I did a couple of years ago. I land in Vrindavan, it's raining like cats and dogs. It's cloudy, it's cold, and it's raining. And I'm staying at an ashram on the other side of like that main road where the Krishna Balaram temple is, and a little bit behind. And what happens, it's raining so much that the road from there to the temple is flooded, like about a foot high. I can't even leave. Talk about a wrench in my plans. A serious wrench in my plans. I'm like, I can't believe this. I can't even make it to that temple. So at one point, I'm like, well, I got to get to the temple. I'm just not staying in this ashram here. My mind's going to drive me crazy. And so, you know, it's this high water, so I go through it. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of nectar in that water, and it's flooded. We won't describe the variety of nectar that was there, but I had to get out. So I made my way to the temple. I guess I must have washed off or something. I don't know. And I'm thinking, what can I do? What am I going to do from now? I'm going to be bored out of my mind. And so then I thought, well, let me go to the library. They had a library that we could access at that time. I checked out the Lilamrita, and I'm like, let me read about what happened, how Prabhupada established the Vrindavan ISKCON temple. Let me just read about that since I'm here. I can't go anywhere. For the next 2 to 3 days, I'm just reading that whole story. And I was like, oh my gosh, how much did he struggle for this, and how much hard work he did, and we were cheated, and the devotees were working so hard. And my appreciation for the Krishna Balaram temple just kind of went through the roof. And then a big realization hit me. The realization hit me that I was coming to Vrindavan and I wasn't even thinking about the Krishna Balaram temple. I wasn't even thinking about Prabhupada Samadhi. I was thinking about all the other temples except this one. And I'm like, this is the home that Prabhupada gave to me here in Vrindavan. Like, this is the place I come to. And I'm like, well, even if I don't go to any other temple in Vrindavan, and again, this was my realization at that time, even if I don't go to any other temple, my whole trip to Vrindavan is perfect because I'm at Krishna Balaram temple and Prabhupada Samadhi is here. He's my acharya and this is the temple he gave to me. And if I can make it here, my entire trip is perfected. I don't need to go anywhere else. Not, again, I'm not saying that we shouldn't go. Whenever I can, I do go to all the temples. But that was my realization at that time, like 20 years ago or so. That if I'm here and I just do Mangal Arati here or just take darshan, you know, offer obeisance at the samadhi, my trip to Vrindavan is actually perfect. I don't need anything else. I don't need to go anywhere else. Everything I need is right here for my spiritual protection. So I felt so much gratitude, and that somehow Krishna arranged to fix my consciousness. Because it was, my consciousness was like, oh, I'm going to go here and here and here and here and do this and this. It's like all over the place. But Krishna just shut everything down, flooded the place, and I couldn't go anywhere except stay in Krishna Balaram. So I'm so grateful that that happened. And it just allowed me to again appreciate the austerity Prabhupada performed and so many of his disciples performed to build these temples, especially in India in the 70s. You know, building anything is hard anywhere in the world, even now. But building something in India, I can't even imagine. 50 years ago? Oh my Lord. I don't even know how it was. And such a gorgeous space. So anyways, that allowed me my appreciation for Prabhupada, everything that had been done, to really just increase and to constantly be in that. So whenever I do go to Vrindavan, I remind myself, I remember what happened, and I'm like, okay, I do want to go to these places, but the most important place for me is right here. Right here in Krishna Balaram Temple, because this was where Prabhupada sacrificed to put this structure up, put the deities here, install them here, so that we could come here and take shelter. And then from here, we can go to other places. So that's sort of like, that what happened to me 20 years ago, sort of remains with me every time I go to Vrindavan. That becomes sort of like my guiding realization, like, okay, this is really it. This is the place in Vrindavan for me. And whatever else I get to do is just a sort of a bonus for me. So that's, again, my realization. And everyone else may have their own, but that's sort of what guides me when I go there. So thinking about just this, the generosity principle of the Vedic tradition, and gratitude to Prabhupada, there is one really nice section in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in which gratitude is depicted really nicely. And I wanted to just share a little bit of that story. And I thought, this is one of my favorite stories actually in all of our scriptures, from the Bhagavatam to Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is literally one of my favorite stories, if not my favorite altogether. So the story takes place, we know that Lord Chaitanya, after he took sannyas, he went to Jagannath Puri. He went to Jagannath Puri and ultimately he met Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya brought him to his home. He instructed him, and Lord Chaitanya humbly sat there and listened to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya talk about impersonalism. And then, of course, Lord Chaitanya blessed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to see the more personal perspective of the bhakti tradition. And then at this time, then after some time, Lord Chaitanya left to go on a South Indian tour. And I believe he went there for 6 years. Was it 6 years that he traveled to South India? Or 2 years?
3 years.
Okay. I've heard between 2 and 6. I keep hearing different numbers, but I don't know. Anyways.
6 years outside Puri.
6 years?
Outside Puri.
Outside Puri. Okay. Oh, total of 6 years outside Puri.
Yes.
Okay. That means the Vrindavan trip and everything. Okay. So he traveled to, you know, he's gone to South India for 3 years. And as soon as he left, King Pratap Rudra approached Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and asked him that, "I hear there's a great personality staying with you, and I would love to meet him if you can arrange an interview." And the king and the Lord and the Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya basically told the king, "Well, actually, he already left. He's already gone." And he said, "Well, why'd you let him leave?" He said, "Well, you know, he's the supreme personality of Godhead, and he's independent. He can do what he wants." And somehow the king immediately accepted that this great personality is the supreme personality of Godhead, because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the head priest of the Jagannath temple. He was the guru and teacher of the king, and one of the most learned, probably the most learned personality in all of India, on the whole planet at that time. Incredible. Genius personality. And so, and then the Bhattacharya said, "Well, he's gone now, and he won't be back for a few years." And when the king said, "Well, could I meet him?" He's like, "That's going to be difficult. He's a sannyasi, and he won't associate with you because you're a king." Like, "But how about this? When he comes back, whenever that is, you can arrange for a nice place for him to stay. A place that's not too far from the temple, and it's also a little bit private and quiet." The king thought, "Okay, great, at least I get to do some service to him." And then eventually, after a few years, Lord Chaitanya comes back. He's meeting with all the devotees. Everybody's in Puri meeting with him. And then when everyone leaves, the Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he approaches the Lord and says that, "Can I have your permission to make a statement without fear?" Lord Chaitanya, of course, understands some kind of question's about to be asked. And he says, "Well, if I find your question reasonable, I will accept it. Otherwise, I will reject it." So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says, "Well, there is this king who, his name is Prataparuda, and he's very anxious to meet you, and he wants your permission to meet you." And as soon as Mahaprabhu heard this proposal, he covered his ears and he said, "Why are you requesting something so undesirable? Why are you asking me something like this? For me, in the renounced order, to be seen with a king, it's like just drinking poison. Why would I kill my reputation by being with someone like that?" The Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "You're right. Sannyasi should be, but this is a great devotee. He's an incredible devotee. He's not any materialistic person." He says, "But the fact that the word king, the title king, is connected to his name, he's already like dangerous for me. I can't go near him. And if you make this request one more time, I will leave here and you'll never see me again." And of course, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya just got scared, because the Lord just had gone away for like 3 years and he just came back. Like, he could go again. He's supremely independent. He could just walk right out. And you would not be the person who was responsible for Mahaprabhu leaving. The next morning, everybody's like, "Hey, where'd the Lord go?" Out? Where? Well, I don't know. Why? Well, he's the Supreme Lord. He can do whatever he wants. Right? You would not want to be answering that question for the next 300 devotees that are going to ask you where he went. Especially because he was staying with you, right? So that's not the question he wanted to answer for the next, you know, 6 months of his life and get cursed by everyone. So he got scared and he backed off. And then, of course, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya told the king that, "Hey, you know, I don't think it's going to happen, because he's not interested in meeting you." So, of course, the king is quite disappointed, quite frustrated, quite sad. And then Ramananda Roy returns from his trip. When he returns from his trip, he goes to see Lord Chaitanya. And this is after Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy had that beautiful discussion on the bank of the Godavari. Beautiful 1 week long or so discussion. And there was so much ecstasy, there was so much love between just the two of them. So he comes back to see the Lord, Lord Chaitanya. And he says that, "Because you asked me to leave my job and come stay with you in Puri, I asked the king that I'd like to leave my job and I want to spend the rest of my days with Lord Chaitanya. And when I told him, the king became teary-eyed. He was so grateful. He felt that, and he immediately granted me like an immediate retirement and gave me my full pension that I was due. Can you imagine not working your full term and getting a full pension? Companies are not that generous, right? They're not that generous. So, and so this sort of melted a little bit Lord Chaitanya's heart, because the king, this is so amazing, whereas the king was refused darshan, and his own minister is being favored by the Lord. Can you imagine, you want something, you want to do something, you're denied, and someone who's like slightly lower than you gets that? Ooh, we would burn with envy. No matter what we say, we would burn. We would have to preach to ourselves till we're blue in the face. We'd have to quote ourselves all kinds of scriptural quotes to make ourselves feel better, how this person got it and I didn't, and I was refused. And they're like, hey, can I get on the altar? No, and then someone younger than you, who, let's say, you brought through Krishna consciousness, can I go on the altar? Yeah, please, you should definitely come worship the deities. Can you imagine that? You'd be like, we'd be doing backflips and flipping out all over the place. So, the king got refused, but his minister, Ramananda Roy, was given permission to be, not just to see the Lord, but to live with the Lord and associate with him every single day. Whoa. And yet, the king wasn't envious. He was happy. He immediately granted Ramananda Roy the leave. And because of this, this really pleased Lord Chaitanya. So, then at some point again, the king asked. Well, I'm getting to this point of gratitude. Remember, I'm going to get to this point of, this is, I think, a wonderful lesson in gratitude through the story. So the king is just, his anxiety to meet the Lord is increasing. He again asks Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He says, have you tried again to see if I can meet Lord Chaitanya? He says, I have tried to the best of my ability, but he's just not agreeing to meet with a king. And then King Prataparudra says that, you know, Lord Chaitanya has descended on this planet to deliver everyone, even people like Jagai and Madai, who are murderers and thieves and rapists. Like, am I lower than them? Like, think about it. Like generally, people in a high position, like politics or kings, egos are literally, right? They pierce the earth and they're into the orbit, right? It's just like, they're just, it's just normal. If you have that much, you'll have a big ego. It's just almost impossible not to. And now, just try to put yourself in these shoes where he's seeing that Lord has, you know, delivered Jagai and Madhai, like drunkards, people you shouldn't even get near. Could just be bad for our consciousness. He's delivered them, and here's a pure devotee of the Lord who serves the Jagannath temple, who sweeps in front of the Rathyatra. He's not given darshan, yet drunkards are. So you can imagine what's going on in his mind. It's hard to imagine what's really going on in his mind. So, you think, so what, you know, that is, has he taken some kind of vow to just deliver everyone except me? Is that what's happening here? And then he says that if I do not receive Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, my body and my kingdom are certainly useless. Like, he basically threatened to walk away from the kingship. That if these robes are preventing me and this crown is preventing me from having darshan of the Lord, I will put these things away and I will become a mendicant. If that's what it takes to see the Lord, I will do it. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, seeing this, he gets a little worried, because obviously if the king leaves the post, there's danger. Just like even when Vena was killed, they needed to put someone in place, because you have a kingdom without a king, it'll just get plundered really fast. People will just come and take over. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a little worried, but he could see, he was very impressed at the king's determination. And the thing is, he not only was he determined, he didn't become bitter. That's really key. I think that's really important because I can speak for myself. If something is refused to me that I really want, you get bitter. Because we think we deserve it. Right? Like, I've been around so long, I deserve to be doing this. I deserve to be given this respect. He's the king. And he's a pure devotee, by the way. Right? And at least it's never indicated that he had that mentality of bitterness and anger and getting negative or bitter towards Lord Chaitanya or his devotees. He could have very easily got envious towards everybody. Human nature would dictate that that's what would happen. That if you were refused and everyone else was given the mercy and you were being singled out like that. Of course, Lord Chaitanya was setting a very strong example here. So then, what happens is, he asks Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to make a plea to all the devotees. Please, on my behalf, ask all the devotees to ask Lord Chaitanya. Like, please, everyone go beg him to let me see him. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is a little bit worried that the king could follow through on his, like, he could just leave it behind because he's determined. And his goal is to see the Lord. He can't see the Lord. He doesn't care about the kingdom. At this point, he's losing interest in the kingdom. And this has become like the talk of the town. Right? Like all the devotees know that the Lord is not deemed the king. So it's not a real private affair. It's becoming a little public. Like if publicly the Lord is saying, I will not see him. Imagine if a great devotee comes, a very senior devotee, and says, I will meet everyone except this one devotee. So, that's kind of what's happening. If you think about it, it's a small place. Everyone knows each other. And it's known. And the king is just being isolated. So, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya approaches all the devotees and says, here's what's happening. The king is threatening to leave his kingdom if he doesn't get to see the Lord. But if we ask the Lord to see him, he's threatening to leave. We're being threatened on both sides. Like the king is threatening us and the Lord is threatening us. If the king leaves, we get ambushed by who knows who. And if the Lord leaves, then we'll all just die. Right? Between a rock and a hard place. That's literally, it's interesting, right? There's two threats being made to the devotee. What do you do? They said, well, here's what we're going to do. Here's our brilliant plan. We're all just going to go to Lord Chaitanya together, because there's strength in numbers. Right? We're going to go together. And what we'll do is, we won't ask Mahaprabhu to see the king. We'll just start glorifying him very casually. All the wonderful things he's doing. And so they all in a group huddle together, walk over to Kashi Mishra's home where the Lord is residing. And there, but when they enter his room, somehow they just don't have the power to speak. Like they're scared to say anything to him. And just imagine if like a group of your friends walks in and they just all stand in the corner of your room and they don't say anything. You're like, okay, what's going on? You guys have to say something. You're here to say something. So the Lord Chaitanya is like, I can see you want to say something. You better just say it. And then, I believe it's Lord Nityananda who speaks up. Yeah. We want to tell you something. Although we cannot stay without speaking it, we're still very much afraid to speak it. But yeah, we want to say something, but we're too afraid to say it, but we can't stop ourselves. So anyways, what we have to say is that unless he sees you, the king of Orissa will become a mendicant. There you go. We said it. I said it. The king has decided to become a mendicant and accept the sign of a mendicant. The king also expressed his desire to see the moon-like face of Sri Chaitanya to his eyes full satisfaction. He would like to raise the lotus feet of the Lord to his heart. Like Haridas Thakur had done when he was passing. Mahaprabhu's mind, actually, it's explained, became a little softened. But externally, he wanted to speak harshly. So internally, his heart kind of melted. But externally, he still wanted to speak harshly. He said, I can understand that you want me to see the king. But you know what's going to happen is all the people are going to blaspheme me. Because they're going to say, why is the sannyasi spending time with a king? Doesn't he want to enjoy the wealth of the king and the comforts of a king? He said, what to speak of that? Of all the people, what they're going to say, what's Damodar Pandit going to say about me? He criticizes me no matter what happens. Even if I don't do anything, he criticizes me. If I do this, what's going to happen? So I'm going to leave it to Damodar Pandit to decide what to do. And now, boom, perfect way to deflect the attention. Bam, you know? Now everyone's like, okay, what are you going to say? You're responsible now. Either the king becomes a mendicant, now the lords are like perfectly, expertly, whoo, transferred it over. Like, okay, now everyone's like, okay, what are you going to do? Now when our partner's like, well, you know, you're the supreme personality of God, and you can do what you want, that's what you do, you're totally independent, right? So he said all of that. Then, the brilliant suggestion that Nityananda Prabhu had, that there is a way we can do this, by which you need not meet the king, but which would enable the king to continue living. If you, out of your own mercy, send one of your outer garments to the king would live hoping to see you sometime in the future. And the Lord said, since you're all very learned personalities, whatever you decide, I should accept. The Lord Nityananda got a piece of garment from Govinda, his personal servant, and he was given to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who sent it to the king. And this is the line that I wanted to get to. When the king received the old cloth, he began to worship it exactly as he would worship the Lord personally. This is what we call gratitude. This is what we call gratitude. He could have been like, a cloth? What? I deserve so much more than this. A cloth? Cha. He was so grateful. He worshiped it just like the Lord. And so, and I think that for me, this is such a powerful thing that he could have had so many different approaches. He, again, anger, bitter. He could have even punished people because of this. He got in the bad news. The king, absolute authority, could do anything he wanted. But he was just, whatever mercy he got. You know, then we know that eventually the Lord said, I'll see his son. And then ultimately, the Lord saw Pratap Rudra Maharaj sweeping in front of the cart at the Rath Yatra, and that melted his heart. And then the Lord ultimately, in an isolated place, the king was able to recite to him the verses of the Gopi Gita. And the Lord embraced him over and over and over again, crying, shedding tears on him. But really, it was all because of the gratitude the king had for getting that little bit of mercy. That was the first bit of mercy that he got. And so, you know, if we're able to remain grateful for all the little items of mercy that we've gotten, even if we've been mistreated, because you can say the king was mistreated here, right? Very publicly too, a famous person to be publicly neglected and ignored is it's very painful, extremely painful. The harder you are, the bigger you are, the harder you fall, right? And so it's very painful for his ego. But he approached the whole situation with, when he got that cloth, it was just gratitude. It was only gratitude. There was no bitterness throughout the whole time. And so, I think that's so important, and I do this for myself. Try to remember the amazing moments of mercy that I've gotten in my life. And there's been many moments that I have reasons to be bitter for and angry about or ungrateful for. And I try to remember those moments that I've had that were just so full of bliss and so much gratitude, so much mercy that I've received that I definitely don't deserve. I'm positive of that. And I try to remember those. Unfortunately, the mind goes back to the things where it's like, oh, I should have received more mercy at that time. Or why did that person get more mercy than me? I did more service. So our mind's going to do that because it's a little bit spoiled and it's like our enemy. It hasn't been properly trained. But our practice and our exercise is to remember the moments of mercy that we've gotten from Prabhupada, from other devotees, and really hone in on those. And just really remember those and focus on those. Because our mind's going to constantly pull up the places where we didn't get the mercy and we feel like we deserved it. Maybe we did and didn't get it, whatever, it was Krishna's arrangement. But let's focus on what we did get. Especially during this Thanksgiving time, it's an opportunity for us to be grateful for so much that we've been given. I mean, it's incredible. Like, we actually have an opportunity to go back to Godhead. Like, it's incredible. Like, we're on that train back to Godhead. That train's going to make many stops. And some of us may get off on those stops. And some of us will get back on. And we'll get off and on. But we're on the train. And we can be really grateful that we are on, like, sort of like this con train. I'm sure we're not the only ones who have a train. I'm sure many other traditions have trains too. But we're on this train. Right? And we can be so grateful for all the amazing moments of mercy that we've gotten. And remember this mood of King Prataparudra, how he was neglected, how he was ignored, and he was even insulted publicly. During the Rath Yatra, when Lord Chaitanya was dancing and he fell, he purposely fell in the arms of Prataparudra Maharaj. Prataparudra Maharaj, oh my gosh. And then Lord Chaitanya came into ecstasy and he said, oh no, I've been touched by the hands of a materialistic man, chee chee. Like, oh my God, public humiliation. Full-blown public humiliation. But right after that is when he got to massage the feet of the Lord, read. Because he dealt with it properly. He never got upset and bitter. It's incredible. Like, you can tell that the pure devotee's consciousness. We'd just be all flipping out all over if that kind of thing happened to us. So, from this, I think we can just sort of remember the mood of Prataparudra Maharaj the whole time. And because he remained humble and grateful, and patient, he got the supreme most mercy. So thank you, Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yes.
I don't know, do we have time for questions or?
I have to leave.
Okay.
The last 15 minutes.
Okay.
So, anybody have any questions?
I'm just wondering if that was just my imagination or whether that actually happened, that Maharaj Prataparudra could go someplace distant and see Lord Chaitanya.
Well, he was seeing the Lord several times. First, when the Lord entered Puri, he was on the roof, who are all these devotees that are coming? He would see him, like, at the Ratha Yatra. So it's
nobody,
not...
One of the devotees, either Govinda or Sattva Bhattacharya, didn't they say to go someplace and you'd be able to see the Lord there? Anyway, that was in my
mind. I don't know the specific, but I know he did tell him he could go to the garden where the Lord would enter and then he could recite the Gopi Gita to him. But I don't know if there's another pastime. I don't know that.
And one of the things that I thought when you were talking about everything would be too much if everything about Krishna consciousness was given all at once, that made me think that I've just been reading that Prabhupada said to the early devotees, all the young men who joined this, he said, if I told you everything now, you would all faint. So the gradual process that you were talking about. Okay, that's it then.
Thank you very much. Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki.